Having a great time here in the first hour of this edition of Focus. Bill Hobson sitting in for Paul W. Smith at the wonderful St. John's Resort. The Detroit Economic Club luncheon is underway in a adjacent room. And back here at our broadcast center, we are continuing conversations that now take us back into the world of sports. And if you have been a little distracted this spring, celebrating the Tigers, getting your golf game in order, and maybe mowing the lawn on occasion, perhaps a major news sports development slipped under your radar. But the NCAA will never be the same after what has happened, a settlement clearing the way for colleges to pay athletes. I want to color in that picture and explore what all this could mean with Jim Acho, the attorney partner at Cummings, McClory, Davis, and Acho. He's represented a number of NCAA athletes in various cases, and Andrew Donovan, the president of LTS Sports Partners. They are handling NIL for many schools, including Michigan and Alabama. That seems like an inherent conflict of interest, Andrew. We can't have those two under the same roof, I don't think. Maybe Andrew's not hearing me.
I can hear you now.
Oh, there you go. Well, Andrew, I was trying to be funny, and it turned out to be a technical failure, so we'll just reset things from there. Welcome to the show. And Jim,
I thought it was funny, Bill.
Thank you, Jim. I'm pandering for laughs as best I can. Paul Feinbaum, who I don't usually appreciate his bombastic comments, did come out with one that I wonder what you think of. And Jim, we'll let you go first. He said it's the end of college athletics as we know it, this settlement. Is that overly dramatic, or is he on the spot?
No, and Paul is given to hyperbole, you know, for the purpose of ratings and clicks and everything else. I agree with you about Feinbaum, but he's right here. So I'm going to defer in large part to Andrew. Andrew is the NIL guru, and it's why all college athletic departments respect him, as do I. But I do have some thoughts on that. I'd like to preface my remarks with two things. Just on a personal note, this is my 25th year appearing on WJR to discuss sports law issues. Frank Beckman, the late Frank Beckman, rest in peace, first had me on 25 years ago. I've always been proud of the association, so I wanted to say that. The former Michigan football players that I represent in the current class action, now these guys predate the House settlement era, which is the main reason we filed the class action we did. I can come back to that after Andrew speaks. As to your question, make no mistake, this is the end of amateurism, at least at the Division I level. And Bill, Division I college football and basketball players should never, ever again be referred to as student athletes.
Yeah.
They should be referred to as employees, because collective bargaining is coming. There will be a determination that they are in fact employees, that they do have a right to sit down and collectively bargain. It's crazy that it's come to this. But the NCAA, the college presidents and athletic directors really have only themselves to blame. 15 years ago, they should have gotten together, gotten their arms around this when the O'Bannon lawsuit was filed 15 years ago.
Wow.
But they didn't. Everybody could see it but them.
And that was the O'Bannon lawsuit was connected to name, image, and likeness in a video game, which the
That's
NCAA
right.
continued to fight forever and forever. Andrew, what happens next? Does a kid ever have to go to class anymore in order to play on the field at the Big House, or class is kind of a thing of the past?
Well, it depends who you ask, but from a regulatory standpoint, none of that has changed. The athletes are still viewed in the eyes of the NCAA or any governing body as student athletes. I will say, though, I agree with what Jim said there. We have been using the terminology athlete, cutting off the student, with our clients for 4 years now, and doing that by design because of the reality of where the industry is heading. All that to say, yes, athletes still have to go to class. They have to meet progress toward their degree. There are GPA eligibility requirements. But all of those things now are going to be more closely evaluated as new capital comes into the industry and institutions are trying to make decisions on what sports they prioritize. How they generate new revenue, and ultimately what this House settlement's all about, how they share that revenue with their athletes, which is going to call for some really complex decision-making on campus, not just on a team-by-team or athlete-by-athlete basis, but from an institutional perspective. What do you value as an institution? What do you prioritize? What's your philosophy when it comes to high-level Division I athletics? And I think to your original question, it is going to look different. It's looked different for 4 years now, and it's just going to continue to look differently as we move forward.
And I can see these worlds colliding at some point where the university says, okay, these are no longer varsity sports. These are going to become club sports. And then there will be Title IX lawsuits that come in that says, oh, you can't do that. And meanwhile,
exactly right.
Meanwhile, we're all in the minor leagues now. Instead of just going to good old State U and being able to cheer for the kid that you saw come in as a freshman, develop and grow up to be a senior, he walks his mom and dad out to the 50-yard line on senior day. They go out and get a big win over the Buckeyes. That's all gone. It's all gone.
It's gone, Bill, but it's been gone for a long time, admittedly. When this became big business, when coaches started making $10 million a year and programs started bringing in a couple hundred million in revenue, it changed, which is why they should have read the tea leaves, seen this coming, gotten their arms around it. So now it became the Wild West. Here's one thing that I think is important, and it could be chaotic. Part of the settlement agreement puts a $20 million salary cap per program to disperse at their discretion among the different varsity sports. Now, most of the schools have said most of the money is going to go to football, and you can understand that.
Yeah.
But if you think spending $15 million a year on a football program, that's where it's going to stay, you're crazy. Ohio State, I think, was $20 or $25 million last year. So what's going to happen? Big boosters are going to get involved. And that means cheating.
We're going full circle.
We're going to go back to it.
Yeah,
now.
Back to where we used to be. So,
right.
And we're running out of time here. Just so you both know, with your permission, I would like to reach back out to the two of you to have a longer conversation for a podcast that I work on because this is fascinating. But just so all of you know, as sports fans, what used to be illegal for colleges and for boosters to do has become legal for them to do and is heading back again to becoming illegal for them to do. In the meantime, we got 17 and 18 year old kids who don't know which way is up. It's a conversation that needs a lot more time. Jim Acho and Andrew Donovan, sorry for the time constraints. Thank you for joining us as we take a break here at the top of the hour for the news. It's Focus here on WJR coming to you from St. John's Resort. Bill Hobson sitting in for Paul W. Smith.